Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the very first episode of Overthrows, in which we're going to be talking about current affairs news on cricket. This will not be Overthrows next week onwards. The cricket stuff, everything on the field will be Overthrows, and Uncovered will be the current affairs episode. We're just splitting up these podcasts in two so that it's easier for you guys.
You've confused me now. So,
yeah, we'll,
but yeah, I think what you said is
we'll figure it out after this one. Of course, it's a trial and error sort of situation. But anyway, lots of fun stuff to talk about. I want to start with the West Indies clapping back. And maybe I should have put in Brathwaite claps back over here, because you might have caught that news of Rodney Hogg calling the West Indies pathetic and hopeless. And then after Brathwaite won that test in the post-match interview, he basically said that they used that as motivation. And he kind of flexed his muscle and he said, are these big enough for you now? A talk now, Viv moment in, contemporary cricket. What do you make of it?
I mean, no one gives a shit what Rodney Hogg says to begin with. So I find it absolutely incredible that any human... So Rodney Hogg is the guy who said that... I'm trying to remember what it was, but he tweeted something incredibly racist, aimed at Muslim people at one stage. He's just full of shit, and he says things and doesn't get a lot of attention. And I'm shocked that they noticed it. This is what I would say. I'm trying to think of who it was. I think it was when Colin Graves took over, took over the ECB. So quite a few years ago now, he took over the ECB, and I think their next tour was the West Indies. And, you know, he's interviewed and he said, well, we should beat the West Indies. They're an ordinary side. And West Indies drew that series, I think, or maybe they even won that series, but they certainly didn't lose it. And whoever the captain was, and it's a while back, so I can't remember, might have been Darren Sammy, said, oh, we use that as motivation to win. And I was like, but you didn't win the first test, right? So when it was first said, and a couple of days later when you played, no motivation. And then a week later, motivation. It's the same with Rodney Hogg. What happened in the first test? You had to keep repeating his comments. The point being is that, and West Indian cricketers do this a lot. You can go back to that whole, I think it was Darren Sammy again, bringing up the Mark Nicholas comments about them being brainless. All these different things that they will use. What about all the times they fucking lose, Bayram, and people say that they're shit, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's nonsense. And I remember saying this, and Alan Butcher, former Zimbabwe coach and Surrey legend, was like, if you think that they haven't used this as motivation, then you don't know as much about cricket as people think you do. And I was like, why didn't it work in the first test? That's all I'm asking, right? Why did it only work here? And what about all those other tours, right? All those many, many tours and World Cups when everyone said, this team's rubbish, they won't do very good, and they don't win.
Yeah.
Right? I think it actually diminishes the West Indian talent at times when they say this, right? Like in 2016, they didn't need Mark Nicholas calling them brainless to win that World Cup. They were playing smarter cricket than everyone else, right? You can always, I'm not saying you can't do it, but to make a big deal of it, it's just like, what? And, you know, they always do well against England in the West Indies. England isn't particularly well suited to playing cricket in the West Indies. They just don't, the pitches don't suit them. And they always make mistakes when they go there, and the West Indies get fired up and play really, really good cricket. What about when they were in Australia last time and everyone said they were crap, the West Indies, right? Why didn't it work that time? So to me, it diminishes the good cricket that they play to pretend that you need to do that. And also it's just confirmation bias, right? Like of all the other time, so many teams in the world are written off or someone says something crap about. And I think it's no different than, I don't know if you listen to the podcast we did on Sledging and Trash Talk we did with the American guy, Rafi. It's a really good point. If you haven't listened to it, I think you'd really like it, Bayron. There's a bit of science about trash talking. Yeah. There is no doubt that there are certain people who, when you say something negative about them, take it and use it, right? But you've watched The Last Dance, right? So there's that story about Michael Jordan smashing that guy because he said something and Jordan used it as motivation. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out the guy never said anything to him.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a great story about Shaquille O'Neal sort of saying every time he went up against David Robinson, he destroyed him because David Robinson didn't give him an autograph when he was a kid. Complete lie, made up story. right? Athletes don't need your, what's the name of Steph Curry's, the movie on Steph
There's
Curry?
There's a movie on Steph Curry?
It's called like, yeah.
Well, Steph used to get motivated or riled up when people used to say shit about his wife, right? I remember that.
Oh, God. Yeah. Steph Curry movie. Sorry. Because this is, it's perfect. It's, you'll understand exactly what I mean. It's called Underrated. Hmm. Now, Steph Curry went number 7 in the draft. He was probably the most lauded college player of all time. And he's the son of a professional basketballer, a really good basketballer as well. And his brother is a professional basketballer, right? He wasn't underrated, right? He was 6'3". People weren't sure how his body would transform into the NBA. But he was still the 7th best player in the world. Seventh best player outside the NBA in the world that year, right? Turns out he goes on to be absolutely great. Michael Jordan didn't go number one pick either. Lots of great players have not gone number one. Kobe Bryant went number 14 or 15. Giannis also went lower, right? But they need to build this narrative. And when I heard Brathwaite say that, I'm just like, oh, you don't need to do that. Just, you know, you can make up your own nonsense thing of that. And I remember, you know, being involved with the CPL. You know, with our team, and our team had Darren Sammy and Karen Pollard and David Warner, Mitch McGlinigan and Muhammad Sammy and Mark Chapman and KS Ahmed, right? Like, rucking Cornwall. Good players, right? And there was a point at which we had a game where we came back after a really bad loss. And I wrote, instead of writing analysis, I literally just wrote Brad Hodges' speech, right? Which is like, you know, my Any Given Sunday screenwriting moment, but in real life, right? And part of it was this whole narrative that everything had gone against us. But I kind of more meant it in the thing of there wasn't a conspiracy against this. Just that in, you know, our schedule was packed in a weird way because our owner wanted something. And, you know, a couple of key moments had gone against us. And, you know, and you know, all these sorts of little things that were going on. And I talked to some of the players and, you know, they loved that, right? And we went out and won that game. And I saw some of the players afterwards and they were like, so do you really think, like, the CPL's got something against us. I went, no, CPL needs you to succeed, right? Because you're the shittest franchise. If you don't succeed, that's a big issue. They won't be able to sell it to anyone if you guys don't get a little bit better. But they really had started to buy into this whole narrative of like us against the world. And how many athletes have we seen like that before? But what I would always say, Bayram, is why don't you just try and make yourself the best you can be every single day, not just when some player who hasn't played since, I don't know, 1985 comes out and says something stupid when he always says something stupid. It's just that there isn't always a microphone in front of him.
Yeah.
Right? Like Rodney Hoggs, he's a professional. Well, no, he's not even a professional idiot. He's a amateur idiot. Right? Like, what, Rodney Hogg? How many of these players, the fuck would they know who Rodney Hogg was? Right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure the Wikipedia hits of Rodney Hogg went up.
Oh, yeah.
After he said those comments, because of all these people going, damn, that guy, who's that guy again? Do we need to look him
100%.
Up?
I mean, when I saw that muscle pumping video or whatever, it made me chuckle. I immediately thought of Dinesh Ramdin and the whole Talk Now Viv thing. And also, I was observing Isha Guha's face. And if you want to rewatch that video or whoever is watching, just go and rewatch that video and look at Isha Guha. She does not know how to respond to that. She's like, that's a fair comment to make, something like that.
I don't mind. I actually don't mind the idea that you're if someone says something in the media, you know, and I've been called out by players before, and you know, it'll definitely happen to you in your career. I actually don't mind that, but I hate the lie.
Yeah,
that I said this negative thing, and that because I said it, you went out and won. Go in the you want some negative stuff? People are slagging you off. People are slagging you off and me off right now as we talk
somewhere
in the world.
Someone said in the comments that this video already has 27 dislikes. I don't know what pissed whoever off, but clearly there's something there that we said. Anyway, you mentioned how there's other stuff, right? Remember that tweet by Indian sports journalist Vikrant Gupta in which he said that the West Indies should disband into individual island nations and they should, you know, that way they'll get motivation or whatever. I don't know why motivation is a thing in this, whereas we all know the problem that surrounds West Indies cricket is not motivation, but paychecks. But basically, do you remember that Hillary Clinton tweet in which she basically put up a picture of her baby self and tweeted future US president or something like that? well, she did that. And that is probably the worst aged tweet I've ever seen in my life. And that Vikrant Gupta tweet about the West Indies disbanding is probably the cricket equivalent of that. I co-tweeted it again. And I said that this is exactly like this. This tweet has aged like Shamar Brooks. Again, I've done it again. Shamar Joseph's rise to stardom. Only if Shamar never left Barrackera and all of the trees over there were set on fire, basically.
It's, yeah, and look, I have got no problem with people having opinions, right? Like, I think that's a perfectly, it's fine. Have your opinions on sport and everything else. People are going to get things wrong. What was that tweet we had a couple of weeks ago that you showed me, which was out of context cricket put up when it was, the guy who said that Harry Brooks wasn't serious enough because he wasn't playing in the series for personal reasons, and then he said, "I hope Virat Kohli gets better with all of his personal issues like as soon as possible." Mm-hmm. Right, that sort of stuff. I think it's if you put it out there, like if you're, I mean, Rodney Hogg, former Australian player, a little bit disgraced, as I said, because of the sort of racial connotations of some of the stuff that he said publicly before, but people are still going to put a microphone in front of him. He's probably going to still turn up in places and do stuff. I've got no problem with that. If you say that, being put on blast, like I've had that before. I can't, you know, I've had that's more than fine, but let's not pretend it is more than what it is, right? Like if you want to clap, as you said, if you want to clap back, fine, clap back. But don't pretend that had anything to do with the victory. That's just nonsense. Yeah.
And I mean, if anything, Shamar Joseph, we should ask him what motivated him, right? Because he's ultimately the guy who got you 7 wickets with a sort of broken toe, bowling 12 overs on the bounce or whatever. There was a break in between, but still, we're still going with that narrative. Also, just before we move away from the West Indies, right? Brian Lara teared up. Carl Hooper was overcome with emotion, and I get it. You know, Pakistan hasn't won a test match in Australia since 95. The West Indies hadn't won since 97. They hadn't defeated Australia at all in test cricket since, what was it, 2003, maybe? That's our one test. And Pat Cummins also kind of chimed in. He was like, you know, the fan part of him is happy. He was exchanging shirts with Shamar Joseph. He put up a story. All of that nice, fun stuff, you know. Very wholesome content and love that. But this won't really do anything for the West Indies moving forward. That's what is tragic about it because, you know, it's not like, oh, they found this group of players and they're going to continue to win. It's not going to happen because they're still outrageously inexperienced. The West Indies still has an issue where the finances can't cover test cricket and you end up losing money and players are baited away by T20 leagues. None of that has changed. As much as we can say that, oh, a strong West Indies is good for cricket, that's not what's happened over here. And the guys at the Caribbean Cricket Podcast even tweeted that we're done hearing this. If you want to actually do something, you know, fix the finances, help us out. Because we can write the fairy tale story, but in the larger scheme of things, West Indies cricket has not gone up a notch. It's still where it is.
No, exactly. There's one thing I want to get back to as well of that tweet that you mentioned before. And let's be honest, who'd you say it was?
Vikrant Gupta.
Yeah. He's not the first person to say it. In fact, between the tests, I was contacted by someone from the West Indies who's a fairly prominent person, contacted me and saying they should be disbanded. Right? And you talked about motivation, which is what the other guy was saying. If they play for their nations, they'd be more motivated. Carl Hooper is from Guyana. Mm-hmm. Brian Lara is from Trinidad. They were both in tears when the West Indies won. Were you really saying that there isn't motivation there still? Look at the way the West Indians celebrated that victory. Are we saying they didn't have a motivation to be good for the West Indies? The problem isn't that, and it's never been that. It is, you know, and you and I have covered this a million times, but it is the structure of world cricket. It is the inability to make a good amount of money from the Caribbean islands. It's, you know, it just is what it is. And we wouldn't have that test victory if these islands had been split up, and they might get split up, right? There's nothing. It's such a loose coalition that it could easily fall apart one day and go back the other way. Fine. You know, we all got to live with the West Indies, and some of us have great memories, and, you know, a couple of people won't because they just saw them lose a lot. That's life, and things will move on and everything else. But it just, you watch Carl Hooper and Brian Lara, you just know it still, and the players on the field, you just know that it still means something. None of that, to go back to, you know, Michelle and Santoki's overall point, I get frustrated with that too. Because I'm, and this whole thing of, and I think Tony Kozier said this to us when we filmed him for the documentary, and I can't remember if it's in the movie or not, but I remember him saying, people always say that world cricket is only strong if West Indies are strong, but no one ever does anything about it. You know, and it's the same. That's one of the reasons we made the film, was very, very similar to that. Not so much about the West Indies, but just everyone's always saying that Test cricket is dying, but no one actually ever does anything about it. So this non-stop ending loop around cricket, and it's just, I don't know, very frustrating.
Yeah. So for those of you who think that this is the start of something special, and I'm not saying there's no chance that happens, but there's not a big chance that happens. Things will go back to normal. West Indies won't win a lot of test matches, at least against the, you know, more wealthier nations or boards. And I hope that at least there's some careers that come out of this, which is always the case whenever we see exciting talent from that part of the world. And if anyone wants to know more about motivation and what cricket means to the island people in the Caribbean, go watch Fire in Babylon. I mean, that is a must watch if you were a cricket enthusiast, I feel. Also, Jared's movie, go watch that as well. His documentary, Death of a Gentleman. But anyway, on that note, we'll take a break. We still have other talking points to talk about on Overthrows. You're with Behram and Jared. Stay tuned.
Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our heads, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers and protect your computer today. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortfalls or when rights issues try to dismiss me. NordVPN will help you get through the straight bat of any geo blocks so you can watch all the cricket you want. If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set up for you to win. Want to buy an associate cricket shirt from a place that won't ship to your country? Select NordVPN. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? NordVPN. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow you to, promote NordVPN to pinch it for you. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 additional months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a cricketer protects its nether region with NordVPN today.
Welcome back to Overthrows. You're with Behram and Jared. And just a couple or 3 days or something like that before the England and India series kicked off, Jared, all hell broke loose on Twitter because uncapped left-arm off-spinner Shoaib Bashir, who was another Crick Viz pick, by the way, by England for the series, his visa did not come through, his Indian visa, that is. And it's not the first time we've seen something like that happen for a player of Pakistan origin, because he's born in England. He's born in Surrey. Right, so this guy is English through and through. He has never lived outside of England. So basically, we've seen this with Usman Khawaja before in the past as well. And it's not something that particularly surprises you. But then, of course, England went on to make a big deal out of it, as they should, I suppose. And there were a lot of articles written. But then later, we found out that, in fact, they had gotten to the UAE. And that stamp or visa, whatever Shoaib Bashir was supposed to get, had to happen in the Indian consulate back in London. So that was a technicality over there. But it's still like an issue. Visas in India are an issue. I mean, who knows that better than you, right?
It's just funny that you're saying all this to me and I'm sitting in London because I couldn't get my visa in time for India. I must have applied for 9 visas to India over my career and got 7 of them. The company that they use, I forget the name of them, just dreadful to deal with. It's unprofessional. There's so many things that are just stupid. I found that the few times I've had to deal with the Indian government directly, much easier. So I do lay a lot of the blame. And that's not the only, you know, I've had situations like that with other countries as well, Australia and England. Like sometimes they outsource this thing to these other companies, and the companies just aren't any better than a government would be, right? And they cause more issues in some cases. So look, I'm not the right person to talk about this, and you're probably not the right person to talk about this either, because you would struggle to get a visa, and I just struggled to get a visa. So we're both very warped on this particular topic. One thing I would say is that, you know, I commentated with Harsha Bogle, and he said on TalkSport that this was a storm in the teacup, but I wasn't on air at the time. And I was like, no, it's not. England couldn't pick their player for the first test.
They announced their squad way in early December. I mean, they applied for his visa on December 11th. A lot of those guys got their visa before Christmas.
there's a lot of countries that it's hard to get a visa for, let's be honest. And I think India is certainly on that list. You know, America is probably one that can be tricky at times, but some of the other countries have managed to streamline it a little bit. I think there's a couple of issues here. There's the Indian visas are crap, right? And I don't think the system works particularly well. There's obviously England made an error as well, but I think we know in most countries in the world that would have been fine and he, you know, it would have been handled. And then there's the Pakistan issue that he has Pakistani heritage. And I saw someone online saying, well, what if he goes over there and he talks to someone who's in a sleeper cell and passes them some whatever. And I was just like, yeah, but he's going to get the visa.
Yeah.
Right? He can do that for the second test, mate. Like, that doesn't, do you know what I mean? Like, if that's the way you're thinking, then you shouldn't let anyone with any Pakistani heritage ever in
all
the country.
All these guys,
right?
Moin Ali goes there to play IPL. Imran Tahir goes there. Azhar Mahmood, who is still very Pakistani. Sure, he has a British passport, but he's as Pakistani as Pakistanis get. He's gone and played the IPL. It's not an issue for every
and not
time.
Just playing either. Commentators.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, there's been... So, you know, it is what it is. And we're all aware of it. It's not the only time that this... You know, the India-Pakistan issue causes problems in cricket, and
it's probably, you know, not the last time.
I'm not going to say. I don't think Shoaib Bashir's visa is going to change relationships between India and Pakistan going ahead. Although, imagine if he was the Basil D'Oliveira of India-Pakistan. Anyway, look, it's a pain. I have said this though before, and I'm going to be very clear on this. You work in franchises and you work with international cricket. I think if you were someone who loves cricket, who's an expert on visas around the world, you should be setting up a business and you should be going to each individual cricket board, telling them what your speciality is. And I think you can find me tweeting about this a decade ago, right? Because I used to be a travel agent. I know a little bit about this sort of stuff, and because I've had to apply for so many frigging visas in so many frigging countries. We had one when I was with St. Lucia. I didn't realize we were flying via America, and I hadn't booked in. What's it called? The
ETSA? You must know, because I was Pakistani for the longest time till I became Canadian, and visas were hell for me.
Yeah, exactly. And so I didn't get to fly with the team because I got stuck in Jamaica for an extra day. And so I've been on this thing for so long. There should be specialists involved, and that's what their job is. And they should just consult each cricket board over. And they don't even always have to do it. But then the cricket board has an expert and be like, oh, well, we've had this happen to us again recently. We can actually fix this for you, right? It shouldn't be like the ECB's lawyer. They're not a visa expert.
Yeah, but what I would say is that the ECB has had a couple of instances in the past which they can draw from, you know. I mean, Atif Nawaz also didn't get a visa to cover the World Cup. He couldn't go, so they could have contacted the BBC. Basically, they need to know what sort of process is there for people who need to go with Pakistan origin, right? Because you don't want this to happen in the future. You can't announce your squad in November. It will be announced in early December or whatever. So it's not like there was no time in between. It wasn't like this was delayed or anything. And it's an unfortunate reality that we live in. Another unfortunate reality is that when I started tweeting about it, I got a lot of hate. A lot of people started telling me that, oh, we have to assume every Pakistani is a terrorist until proven otherwise, which is a fucked up view to have, you know. And Shoaib Bashir, that kid is 20. That kid was born in Surrey. He's in the English system. That kid is not a terrorist. And like Jared said, he's going to get a visa eventually.
That's the thing. Let's imagine he was a terrorist, all right? Obviously, we know he's not. Let's push that to the side. Let's imagine he was. He's still going to get the visa. They're not going to keep him out for the whole time. So it's a pointless argument to have in the first
particularly
place, right? And it's like... It's not like they were going through every single thing he'd ever put online or going through his friend. No one from the Indian consulate went out to interview every person that he, at that point you'd be like, I mean, we still think you're nuts, but fine, you're putting in the work, right? So it's a bit ridiculous. But as I said, I just think in general in cricket, visas are so important. Yeah. The amount of times, if you go through, the amount of times a player will be hired for an IPL league, IPL league, a T20 franchise league, right? And not end up going because of visa issues. You know, I have to knock back work all the time for the same reason. Sometimes it's really hard for me to get a visa at the last minute. I think I was I think I was offered a job for the road safety
series
a couple of years ago. They were like, you know, come out and do some stuff. And I was like, well, it starts next week. and I said, I can't get a visa. And I remember when we were at Crick Info, we had the same sort of issues. And to be fair to the BCCI, I remember them being really, really good about, you know, trying to help, but not really being able to help. And I know they're very good for written journalists a lot of the times. Weirdly enough, the BCCI don't seem to help the broadcast journalists as much. And I don't really, I don't know if that has, you know, if that was one of the reasons, Artif, because if you don't have the BCCI on your side, if you don't have a letter directly from them, it does get tricky. Like, I think this time I didn't have a letter from the BCCI. I had a letter from whoever we bought the rights from. I can't even remember who it was now, but we had a letter from someone else. And even that, if you say you're going for cricket, but the BCCI hasn't said that you're coming, or a local cricket board hasn't said, it, all these things are tricky. The point being, we have known this is tricky for a very, very long time. And if you do, the India-Pakistan one is the obvious one. And this was, you know, Ben Stokes made a bigger deal of it than usually happens, right? But the truth is that right across cricket, I promise you, if you look at cricket visa in Google history, in, you know, in Google News, you'll actually find a lot more stories than you would think, because a lot of them are underage tournaments, random freelance players, or not freelance players, but, you know, random T20 players, you know, all that sort of stuff. These things actually happen a lot. And it's just, it's one of those things where I think there should be just experts who can deal with this. And they're not there at the moment. And, you know, it causes an issue, but there's plenty of different parts of this story as, as
and it's
said.
Not even a one-to-one thing. It's also a shame. It doesn't always happen to players with Pakistan origin. It happened this
no,
time.
And that's the other thing. There was a bunch of us who applied for the same visa to go to India this time with what we all thought was the exact same paperwork. And as I said, some people were approved and some people weren't. Like, what do you do with that? Like, we're looking at it going, how has this happened, right? These things just, you know, it is a very complicated system. And a lot of things go wrong with it. It is not the only country that has that.
I mean, Pakistan did this to Australia's spin bowling coach, Sriram. I think he wasn't able to travel with the team when they came to Pakistan. But a lot of people were hitting me back with this. How does that make the other thing right? Okay, Pakistan's wrong. But take your whataboutery and just shove it up your ass or something. I'm not here for it. Anyway, one thing I will mention on a closing note is that Jay Shah's dad, Jay Shah, the secretary of the BCCI, his dad is the Home Minister of India. So if they really wanted to expedite the process, they kind of could have.
Can I go a different direction? When, if, let's say a team is like, is turning up and they're only turning up like 3 or 4 days before a test match. Could a team be Machiavellian and perhaps go, well, if we don't let their star opening bowler, opening batter and captain, we might have a chance in this first time. Anyway, I'm not suggesting teams should do this, Barham. I'm just putting it out there into the universe because it would be very funny and it would be mad, but it would be great.
Dan Liebke put out a tweet, right, in which he said that it only makes sense that India starts choosing the opposition squad now as well or something like that. It was really hilarious. But yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. Feel for the lad. Hope he gets to play in this series.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest issue, isn't it? It's a 20-year-old kid trying to play cricket for his country. And, you know, he gets caught up in shit. He doesn't want... Like, his name would be dragged across social media, and it's like, wait, he just he just wants to play in a test match. He probably wasn't going to play anyway.
I think, yeah, maybe perhaps he wasn't going to play. You know, you never know. It was probably between him and Hartley has more first-class games under his belt, I believe. So maybe he would have been a better choice. I don't know. These are all like hypotheticals at this point.
Yeah.
But I mean, Stokes also kind of honed in on that he feels for Bash, is what he calls him. And I mean, that's ultimately it. You don't want to rob a kid of his dreams. He's probably dreamt of wearing that England cap. And this is already a big thing for him because he wasn't supposed to be on this tour. No one knew much about Shoaib Bashir, yet there he was. So yeah, hopefully that, you know, if he gets a game, everyone wins at this point because England already won the first test, so they won't be complaining. Moving forward to our final talking point of overthrows today, Australia Day, something that has come under the microscope. I've heard, Pat Cummins has said that it comes up every year. And basically, for those for those of you who don't know, 26th of January, I believe, is when Australia Day is celebrated because that's when the fleets of the colonizers first landed in Australia. So there is a bit of a marred history over there, and there's no reason why it shouldn't be controversial. It should be. And I get it. Like, if Scotty Boland's part of your squad and you're having that sort of a celebration, I understand where Pat Cummins is coming from. But he is, of course, the Voke prince that was promised for cricket, Pat Cummins. Of course, he said that, you know, maybe we should choose another day. That's a strong statement coming out of him because, you know, the surveys suggested that people under the age of 30 and thereabouts are more so aligned with Pat Cummins' worldview, and Steve Smith also threw his weight behind his captain. And then, you know, the older generation, not so much. So it is definitely a talking point, Jared.
Thanks to the kind folks at FlexiSpot for looking after my office and my butt by sending me their E7 Pro desk that save your favorite desk heights at a touch of a button. You don't have to crank anything. This thing just finds the height that you like and you can work. And their BS12 Pro chair that supports my posterior while I'm recording, well, this ad and all my shows. If you need great desks, especially ones that change heights or the best quality chairs, head on over to FlexiSpot. I think Ashley Gardner made a big, strong statement about it last year. I think it was last year. Certainly another Indigenous cricketer, probably, you know, after Jason Gillespie, Australia's, you know, most prominent Indigenous cricketer. You know, cricket has a bad history with Indigenous people. So it's just, cricket's always on a delicate place. Look, the thing about Australia Day is, here's the funny thing. When I grew up, I don't remember anyone giving a shit about Australia
Really?
Day. Like, I can tell you a single person who celebrated Australia Day. My auntie talks, she goes, oh, I think we put flags up. And she loves Australia Day now. And I said, I've been at your house on Australia Day. I saw nothing in your house, right? There was no celebrations. We didn't do anything on Australia Day that we didn't do on any other day. I think it was slightly bigger in some other cities outside of Melbourne, to be fair. Australia Day sort of becomes popular partly on the back of, and this is going to sound weird, but there's an alternative radio station in Australia that does the top 100 alternative songs. And it sort of has a little bit of that. Plus, during the 90s, Australia becomes a lot more nationalistic. And, you know, that's when they start wearing the baggy greens, right? Like, you know, we have to all dress the same. And, you know, John Howard becomes the prime minister, and there's almost a throwback to patriotism and all those sorts of things. Racist parties start springing up, like the One Nation Party and things like that. But when I grew up, I just don't remember it. I mean, I don't know a single person in my street who ever did any celebration of Australia Day. Now, compare that to India, which celebrate the exact same day.
The right? Republic Day or something.
Like most of, that's quite big. Like it's a thing. And so it does show you how different it is. And it's become a big issue. I always think about these things in a very similar way. If you would explain Australia Day to a six-year-old, which I've had to do, their question is going to be, but why don't they just move the day?
Yeah. If you want to celebrate the day for being Australian, which I'm completely for, nationalism is problematic, but we all have an identity. And it's okay to celebrate your identity, right? As per me. Yeah. So pick another. That's what Pat Cummins said. He said, maybe we should pick a different day.
and it's funny, these whole generations, and I've had fights, as I said, I had a fight with my auntie about this one. And she was like, you know, we shouldn't have to. We've always celebrated that day. And I was like, I must have missed all the celebrations because I didn't see shit for many years, right? Like, I can tell you one thing. My entire life, we celebrated the Melbourne Cup, right? It's a fucking horse race, mate, right? We have a public holiday for it in Melbourne. The whole country stops to watch this fucking horse race, right? Good horse race, 3,200 meters, handicaps, got some fun thing, you know, things about it. But the whole country stops to do that. And I remember that happening again and again and again and again and again, right? I must have missed all the Australia Day. The only Australia Day celebrations I'm ever aware of was the fact that there was usually a game on in Adelaide, right? So there was a cricket relationship to Australia Day. It's in the middle of the summer. Chances are you're going to play on that day. And the Triple J Hottest 100 competition. They're the only two things that I ever really associated with Australia Day. As I have said to many Australians who get very angry about this, I celebrate being Australian every day by being Australian. Mm-hmm. I don't need a specific day. If you do need a specific day, that's great. Why don't we not piss off the Indigenous people, right, by having it on the same day that they felt like their lives all changed?
100% agreed.
Right? That's all we're saying, right? Right? It's a simple thing. And it's not going to go away, right, while cricket is still being played around that period. Yeah. And that's the no one's asking Aussie rules footballers or rugby players or NBA players about this directly all that often, because they're not playing in an Australia Day game. Yeah. While cricket has the game on Australia Day, it's obviously going to be more of an issue. So I feel sorry for Ashley Gardner, Pat Cummins, the players who don't want
Scotty
it to be
Boland,
changed.
I think. I've heard Scotty Boland has issues with it. And it makes sense. He's got Indigenous heritage.
And to be fair, also the Indigenous players who don't care, they still get dragged into this as well. And I know I don't know what Jason Gillespie or Darcy Short or, you know, Dan Christian. I would assume, you know, certainly in Dan Christian's case, I think he would be pretty against it. But there might be Indigenous players who don't give a shit, right? Or Indigenous players who are like, it's fine. Let's just, there are more important issues. All that's fine. But they all get dragged back into it, right? And, you know, it is a little bit ridiculous. I do feel sorry for the cricket part of it. But to go back to the joke I made about Shoaib Bashir being the Basil D'Oliveira of it, the cricket conversation around Australia Day might be part of the reason that one day it does change, right? And I personally, you know, I always, from the moment I realized there was an Australian Day and not just a day off at the end of January before I went back to school.
Imagine Australia Day moving from the day when the colonizers' fleets arrived to the day that Pat Cummins chose.
Do you know, I mean, let's be honest. Oh, I was going to say, Australia Day should be the 3rd of January.
The first New Year's
test? Yeah. Because I was going to say it should be Boxing Day, but we've already got a holiday for Boxing Day. So we don't. Do you know what? It should be the day after Boxing Day or the first day in Sydney, right? That would be absolutely. That for me is very assuring. But, I think it's great that modern Australian cricket. It's funny. I read Ricky Ponting's book, which is fucking long, right? And there's the first part of it is written by Peter Lawler about his childhood and coming up. It's really interesting. The rest of it, Bayram, is the most boring fucking drivel and ever written. It's like, I promise you, it's like this big long thing and there's like a little thing of, I went to the gym today in it. And it's like, just take, can you not edit some of his diaries out of this, right? And I remember reading it and going, Ricky Ponting lived in Australia at a really interesting time. He's a proper Lonnie working class kid, but he lived in Australia, you know, he grew up in Australia that was becoming really middle class, right? He traveled to Zimbabwe. He played cricket in Sri Lanka, right? He saw the rise of India right in front of his eyes, right? Like, you know, all these incredible things. And you read his book and you're like, did Ricky Ponting notice he was in these countries? Did he? You know, it's really remarkable how little he noticed. And look, there are going to be Australian captains who I don't agree with politically, right? I mean, Mark Taylor, I think, was involved with conservative politics. I don't think he ever got involved, but I think he supports conservative politics. And there would be other Australian cricketers off the top of my head that would be in a similar. In fact, I've got friends who've played and coached in Australia who are, you know, conservatives. They are in a unique position because they do travel around the world and they can actually sometimes cut through the quick of things, right? Of the nonsense of, you know, of all this sort of stuff. But also they are very much, I've always find it weird when people go, oh, celebrities shouldn't talk about this or athletes shouldn't talk about this. And I'm like, look at some of the people who are political commentators. The fuck have they done to earn it? They just wrote a shitty opinion piece column that like was full of like absolute nonsense. And suddenly they're an expert on China and Russia, right? And Pat Cummins can't talk about like his own country. Yeah. Fuck off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. When politicians and other people in the world stop talking about sport when they don't know anything about it, we'll allow athletes not to talk about politics and everything else. But you know, you can't stop people talking about what they want. He truly believes this. And this is a really little story just about Pat Cummins. I was contacted by a startup who wanted to do this. They had this idea. I don't really know how to explain it, but it was like essentially getting athletes to donate things and then using that money to for environmental causes. But then you would go into a raffle and then you would go on a holiday with Pat Cummins or you could bowl to Pat Cummins in the nets or something. I'm just using Pat Cummins because I'm talking about him, but you know, it might've been the same with Ronaldo or, you know, LeBron James. That was the whole idea, was to get to as many famous athletes as possible. And, you know, I passed it through to Pat's people because I thought it might be something he really likes. And they were really excited. I don't know if the startup went in. I don't know what happened to the whole idea. But they were really excited because he was like, this is something that's perfect. He gets to hang out with someone who really wants to hang out with him and help the environment all at the same time. Like, he genuinely cares about this sort of stuff, right? Not everyone does. You and I both know there's plenty of people that say things just because they say things, right?
And I love how Pat Cummins, for whatever he is, I mean, of course, he has been this woke ambassador in cricket, but he's not in your face. He does it very, like, subtly. He's very nonchalant about it. He doesn't, if you actually say him, hear him say these things, it seems like he doesn't care, but he does, because it seems like he's a genuine guy. And it's funny, Jared, just on a closing note, I suppose, how you were mentioning how people keep telling cricketers to shut up. Usman Khawaja was told to shut up, and here he is, Test Cricketer of the Year. Pat Cummins has been told to shut up and focus on his cricket, and here he is, having defended the Ashes in England, having won the ODI World Cup, having won the World Test Championship, still winning consistently before this Test match. You know, they are focusing on the cricket, so maybe you should shut up.
I remember when Pat Cummins, I think he lost the series early on. And it was after, I think, he'd made the comments about the coal industry and everything. And there was all this stuff about go woke, go broke, which is one of those phrases that only exists because it fucking rhymes, because it's nonsensical otherwise. And since that time, he's fucking won everything. Yeah. It's ridiculous how much winning he's done since then. In fact, up until Shamar Joseph, he was probably one of the most successful cricketers going around. So look, obviously the whole thing's nonsensical. I've said before, I support Tim Tebow's rights to talk about the abortion issue, despite the fact that I find everything he says stupid and, reductive and doesn't really help anyone at all. But Tim Tebow really believes about that sort of stuff. He should be allowed to talk about it, right? And whether you agree with it or not, they are still, everyone is a human being who lives on the planet. They get to interact with what they want to get to interact with. If your fucking uncle down at the coffee shop is going to talk shit about the flat earth, right? I think, you know, your favorite footballer should be allowed to talk about it as well. We can laugh at both of them, right? But that is the thing that they believe really passionately because they've seen a YouTube video about
it. And now we have an entire podcast to talk about these sort of things exactly. So I suppose on that note, we'll call it a day, a long, long one today. So we still have another Footmarks to record. But thank you to everyone who tuned in and was in the comments section. We weren't very interactive today with you guys just because there was so much to cover. And we wanted to do justice to both of these test matches, which we covered earlier in the previous podcast. But anyway, thanks for tuning in. Subscribe to this channel and Jared's other channel. We'll be back with more Uncovered and Overthrows podcast next week. That's all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Baron Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku, as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you are a podcaster who happens to waffle on and you need a way to cut down your long-form content, Memento FM is here to save the day. They turn your lengthy media into bite-sized chunks for even the most time-starved audience. Start using Memento FM today.